Recording. Okay, so tonight is the Feb 25th, the first session of going through the big book study. The last one we've done, there was many people. We've got many more here. So if you've got a big book and a highlighter, we're going to go through the doctor's opinion. Now, Dr. Silkworth was working at Towns Hospital in the late 1920s, and he's been accounted to sober up or to carry to help get sober 50,000 alcoholics since he worked there. And he worked there for room and board. He went through the Great Depression. He lost a lot of money, but he worked for Charlie Towns in Towns Hospital. And before we go to Bill's story, Bill had attended there four times, one for depression and three times for alcoholism. So he asked Dr. Silkworth to write a chapter to go into the book. And it was called The Doctor's Opinion, because back in 1939 and 38, when Dr. Silkworth had diagnosed all these alcoholics with the allergic reaction, what we're going to read about, first symptom of Alcoholics Anonymous. When he diagnosed this symptom, the American Medical Association couldn't recognize it, wouldn't recognize it. So it's called his opinion. So in the early books of AA, when it signs his letters that he wrote to AA, he said, "Yours truly," had no signature. And then back in 1955, when the AMA finally registered it as an illness or a disease, he said to Bill Wilson, "Now put my name in the book." Because all these years later, he already knew that. And Bill knew it was an allergy. So Silkworth was studying with lots of alcoholics, and he made loads of financial references or references to the alcoholics that came into the ward. He would ask them questions, why they got drunk, how they got drunk, could they stop, could they control it? And he wrote journals for years until he came to the conclusion that our body disperses alcohol in a different way. It sits longer in our system than it does in normal people. I've got a diagram for it somewhere that I'll put on the group. And when alcohol gets broken down into acetone and acetic acid, it sits in our system longer. And that's when it creates an actual physical craving for another drink. So we become thirstier when we took a drink. And I never knew none of this until I went through this with Frank. So I'm going to start reading. And it says, "We of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested in a medical estimate of plan of recovery." So straight away, we're going to highlight a plan of recovery. Because Silkworth knew that, and he still speaks about that, we needed some form of moral psychology. We needed some form of step work or some form of program to help get us sober. The plan of recovery described in this book. It says, "Convincing testimony must surely come from medical men who've had experience with the sufferings of our members and have witnessed their return to health." And I highlighted that whole paragraph because what Silkworth did was he saw us come in really sick. And eventually, when we're going to read Bill's story, Bill came back after going to Towns Hospital to carry the message to get guys sober. So Dr. Silkworth would see these guys really sick in bed. He would see Bill Wilson come back and sit by their bedside and show them hope and give them a way out, like Bill Wilson did in his story, give them a solution. So he was the one that witnessed our return to health. So he's the best one to tell the world about it because he's a medical doctor, right? He says, "A well-known doctor, a chief physician at a nationally prominent hospital specializing in alcoholic and drug addiction, gave Alcoholics Anonymous this letter." This is what Silkworth wrote. He said, "To who it may concern." And I highlighted this top word, this top sentence. He said, "I've specialized in the treatment of alcoholism for many years." This guy was a professional, a medical director. If you're going to go for the right advice, the right guidance, he's the one that he would go to. "In the late 1934, I attended a patient, which is Bill Wilson, who, though he had been a competent businessman, a good earning capacity, was the alcoholic, was an alcoholic type that I come to regard as hopeless," and underlined hopeless. And on the side of the page, you can put hopeless, godless, powerless. Because without hope, without God, without power, because we haven't got the power to stay sober, which is all about the first part, step one, right? And I highlight this next paragraph. It says, "In this course of third treatment for alcoholism, right, he had acquired certain ideas concerning the possible means of recovery." This is when Ebbie Thatcher came and visited him on page 13, and Ebbie brought him the message from the Oxford group, which we'll do next week, right? "As part of his rehabilitation, he commenced to present his conceptions to other alcoholics to carry the message." You can write next to that, "carry the message. Impressing upon them that they must do likewise for still others." So Bill brought the message to the ones that were suffering in hospital. He said, "You need to carry the message in order to stay sober," because Bill knew in his story But if he didn't work with other alcoholics, he had very little hope of recovery. He couldn't stay sober unless he worked with another alcoholic. So that paragraph is all about carrying a message. This had become the basis of this rapidly growing fellowship of these men and their families. This man and over 100, and I underlined this and I highlighted it, appear to have recovered. And people hate that recovered, let me tell you. You go to a meeting and tell them you're recovered, there's so many people that turn their nose up because they don't understand what they mean. We recover from the power we lack, because on our own power, we cannot stay sober, which is why we keep relapsing until we find God or find a power greater than ourselves. He said, I personally know scores of cases. These are the 50,000 he witnessed who were completely of that type from other methods that failed completely, because we tried to get sober on our own. We tried to lock up the booze and lock ourselves away and not buy it, white knuckle it. But invariably, we always got drunk because we never had that needed power to see the truth. These facts appear to be of extreme medical importance, because in 1959, it became registered as an illness, right? So the journal that Silkworth took with the medical importance was he could witness our return to health. He could see that a planned program of action. And in 1955, it got registered by the American Medical Association as an illness. Because of their extraordinary possibilities of a rapid growth inherent in this group, which means there's more getting sober, they mark a new epoch in the annals of alcoholism. That means a new era in the problems or the solution to alcoholism, right? They mark a new epoch, an era in the annuals or problems of alcoholism, which means we found a solution to it. These men may have a remedy for thousands of such situations. And I highlighted and underlined this last sentence, because nobody trusts an alcoholic, right? Nobody trusts us. And Shilpa said, you may rely absolutely on anything they say about themselves, because he witnessed our return to health. He then found that he could trust us and have a bit of faith in us. Before that, we're just thieves, and we just lie, and we just cheat, and we're just dishonest. That's our character defects that we come later on in the program. It says, very truly yours, Dr. William D. Silkworth. Now, in the first edition, his name wasn't on that. I have the third edition, and on the third edition, it's in there. And on the second edition, they put it in there. It said, the physician who, at our request, gave us this letter has been kind enough to enlarge upon his views in another statement which follows. In this statement, he confirms that we, and I underline this, who have suffered alcoholic torture. And next to that, I wrote alcoholism. Alcoholic torture. Must believe, I underline must, because there's plenty of must and directions within the book. There's directions and there's warnings and there's promises. We all read the promises out of AA, but we never see the warnings. We must believe. And underline this, that the body of the alcoholic is quite as abnormal as his mind. The two symptoms of alcoholism, it's not the spiritual malady, it's the mind and body. This chapter talks only about the allergy to alcohol. He said, it did not satisfy us to be told that we could not control our drinking just because we were maladjusted to life or have other problems or anxiety or depression or fear. That we were full flight from reality or outright mental defectives, which we meet daily in AA, right? These things were true to some extent. In fact, to a considerable extent with some of us. But we are sure that our bodies were sickened as well. In our belief, and I underline this and I highlight this next sentence. In our belief, any picture of the alcoholic which leaves out this physical factor is incomplete. So when we're going to go through step one, we're going to talk about the allergic reaction, how you're drunk, the quantity, could you control it? Could you stop? Because it's the allergy that makes us alcoholic. Without the allergic reaction, without the allergy to alcohol, I could stop at two or three. My mind might justify drinking every single day, but I could stop at two or three. But because I have that allergic reaction, the allergy to alcohol, doesn't matter what my mind tells me, because when I take one, I can't stop. I'm a blackout drinker. I can't stop. What's Valerie left again? No. It says, the doctor's theory, we have an allergy to alcohol, interests us. And I highlight that. Because when the doctor said we got an allergic reaction, now we know why we get drunk. Now we know when we start, we can't stop because I've got an allergic reaction. I never knew that till I come to AA. But the doctor confirmed it. When he'd done them journals and interviewed all them alcoholics, he said, this is the thing. Every time they take one drink, they can't stop. There's a problem. And this is the only problem of alcoholism we cannot solve. We cannot treat the allergy. Once you've got it, you've got it. You could be 20 years sober, but you're still going to have that allergic reaction. It says in the book in a minute, we're going to read it. Once formed that habit, we find it hard to break. As laymen, our opinion to its soundness may, of course, mean little. But as ex-problem drinkers, we can say that his explanation makes good sense. It explains many things for which we cannot otherwise account. Now I know why I kept getting drunk. Now with the allergy, and that gave me the answer to my problems, that's why I keep getting drunk. Because I've got an allergic reaction. I've got an allergy to alcohol. That's why. Now you go and tell your normal wife or your normal husband, listen, I've got an allergy to alcohol. What if they tell you, they're going to laugh at you? They won't understand it. But it clearly says, as ex-problem drinkers, it makes good sense. It makes perfect sense. I've got an allergy. That's why. That's why I can't have two or three. How many times have we tried that experiment of the first drink? I'm going to have two and stop. I'm going to be in bed by 9 o'clock. All the excuses, all the alibis. But now I've got the allergy. Now I know I've got it. I can't plead ignorance no more. Though we work through our solution on a spiritual as well as the altruistic plane. The altruistic plane is the fellowship and carrying a message. Now, well-being of others, thanks to Hermione. She knows everything, that girl. We favour hospitalisation for the alcoholic who is very jittery or befogged. Some need detox. In the early days of AA, we didn't have so many detox centres. So people would come to us and they'd have to sit in their hands and go cold turkey. They would come and live in our houses for a week or so while they're detoxing. Nowadays, there's a lot more rehab. But some need rehab. Some are that far gone. More often than not, it's imperative that a man's brain be cleared before he's approached. You can't get through to a drunk person. I've tried it. I've tried helping people that are drunk. They need to be a bit more sober, a day off it, or half a day off it, or a little bit copus mentis before his approach. He has then a better chance of understanding, accepting what we have to offer. When we're going to lay that message out, before I explain that allergy to alcohol, if you're steamed up and drunk, you won't understand it. You're not going to get it. But if you're detoxing and you're shaking and you're clucking, then you've got a better chance of understanding what we have to offer. And in AA, we offer you a way out. We offer you hope. A solution to all of your problems is what the program tells us. You just need to be patient and be busy, right? It then says the doctor writes a second letter. He says the subject presented in this book seems to be of paramount importance. I underlined it. Paramount importance. Silkworth read this before he put this chapter in. He read this book. He said, Bill, you know your stuff. And Bill said, can you put a chapter in? He said, Bill, what can I add to something? He says, it's been covered in such masterly detail. What can I add to that? And Bill said, tell him about the allergy. Tell him how you researched it. Tell him your opinion on it, what you found out, what you witnessed, what you saw, how you saw us return to health. Tell us. Put it in print. Never changed. It's never changed. The subject presented in this book seems to be of paramount importance with those afflicted to alcoholic addiction. That's us, right? The chronic alcoholics. I say this after many years' experience as a medical director at one of the oldest hospitals in the country treating alcoholic and drug addiction. He had addicts and alcoholics there. This town's hospital, let me tell you, was an expensive rehab. There wasn't many around in New York at the time. It was expensive. Bill's brother-in-law, Dr. Strong, he paid for it. He paid for Bill to go and get treatment because Bill was potless. He had no money. He wasn't working. And I highlighted this next three lines. He said, there was a sense of real satisfaction when I was asked to contribute a few words on a subject which is covered in such masterly detail in these pages. The book was written by alcoholics, for alcoholics. Bill was the author of the book, but everybody put a contribution in. It went through consciousness, through Akron, and through New York to get to the pages we've got today. And they've never changed in 83 years. Why? Because it's worked for 83 years. Why change something that works? We doctors have realized for a long time that some form of, and underline this, moral psychology. He knows we got the allergy, but they can't treat the mind. But he knows we need to treat the mind because the mind keeps justifying that next trip. The mind keeps blocking out the consequences and the problems. And then the allergy takes over. I tell people the mind controls the body. You take a drink, and then the body controls the mind. Some form of moral psychology of urgent importance, underlined it. That means let's get busy. Urgent importance to alcoholics. When we're going to start this program, we're going to get busy. I sponsor people 6 weeks and we're through. 8 weeks and we're through. We need to get to the problem and get to the solution as ASAP. But its application presented difficulties beyond our conception. What with our ultra-modern standards, our scientific approach to everything, we are perhaps not well-equipped to apply the powers of good that lie outside of our synthetic knowledge. What he's talking about was Silkworth couldn't help us with all this synthetic knowledge, all his powers, all his medical importance. He couldn't apply the program that was needed, the moral psychology. Next to that, I wrote one alcoholic to another. Because we carried a message to AA. We have suffered the problem and then we got the solution. Silkworth couldn't do it. I'm going to read that again. He said, but with his application presented difficulties beyond the doctor's conception. With our ultra-modern standards in the hospital, our scientific approach, this is doctors of normal people, to everything, we are perhaps not well-equipped to apply the powers of good to carry the message because they don't understand our mind that lie outside of our synthetic knowledge. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. One to another, we carry the message. And Silkworth told that, carry this bill to somebody else. He told him that already. Many years ago, one of the leading contributors to this book, it was Bill Wilson, came under our care in the hospital. And while he was there, he had acquired some ideas, which he put into practical application at once. And next to that, I wrote a program. Because Ebbie came to Bill in Towns Hospital on his last visit. On page 13 of Bill's story, you can read it later on. And Ebbie carried the message to Bill in one sitting, in one day. He took him through 3 through to 12 in one session. And Bill had that bright light experience. And Silkworth witnessed that. He said later he requested the privilege of being allowed to tell his story to other patients. Here, with some misgiving, we consented. Because they was unsure what good could Bill do to other alcoholics. But he said, with some misgiving, we consented. Why? Because with their synthetic power and their knowledge, they couldn't keep us sober. They could detox us, but they couldn't keep us sober. So Bill said, let me come in, Silkworth. Let me come and sit with the patients and tell them my story, like Ebbie did with me, and maybe I can do some good. And Dr. Silkworth said, with some misgiving, we've got nothing to lose. Let's give it a go, right? He said, the cases that have followed through have been most interesting. In fact, and I underline this, many of them are amazing because many of them got out of their beds and left the hospital and never returned. Because Bill carried a message to get these guys sober. He told them of the allergy. He had the moral psychology from Evan Thatcher at the steps. He got them sober. They got up, got dressed, and they left the hospital, never to return. And Silkworth witnessed this. He couldn't believe that they had a solution to it. How must he have felt? He could detox you, but he had no form of moral psychology to help you get sober and to stay sober. He said, the unselfishness of these men, which is the alcoholics, as we have come to know them, and underlined this, the entire absence of profit motive. For me to stay sober, I need to carry the message. I need to work one-on-one without any form of reward, any form of profit. Because by doing this daily, it keeps me sober, working with others, as it did with Frank, as it's done with people on the group here, Marilyn, Shay, Lucy, Mia, and other people. and their community spirit is indeed inspiring to one that has laboured long and wearily in this arthritic field. Silkworth said, they believe in themselves, and I highlight this last part. They believe in themselves, and more so in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Because we start with belief that it's going to work. And when I work with another alcoholic and I see you get sober, I then get a bit more faith because I can see it work in other people. It said, of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor. This often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological or mental measures can be of maximum benefit. If they're drunk, it won't work. They need to be a little bit sober. Now, I highlighted from We Believe for two paragraphs down to they are recreate their lives. It's about 12 or 15 lines. You can put a box around it. You can highlight it. You can underline it. This is one of the most important paragraphs in this book, two paragraphs. It says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. My wife don't crave alcohol. She'll have two or three and stop. But the chronic alcoholic cannot stop. For love nor money. We can't leave it alone. We cannot control it. This whole paragraph is for step one and the chronic alcoholic. He said, these allergic types, the chronic alcoholic, can never safely use alcohol and underlined in any form, cakes, cooking, in any form whatsoever. Yes, it burns off when you cook with wine. Yes, it burns most of it off. Why would you want to tempt it? It's your mind that plays a trick on it. And once having formed the habit and they found they cannot break it, having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things, humans, their problems pile up on them and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. He says, frothy emotional pill seldom suffices. That means you've got this. Just don't drink. Just come to meetings. I don't cut it for the real alcoholic. Because I can't stop for any and all reason. I'm the chronic alcoholic that has to take a drink. When I take a drink, I cannot stop. You're telling me, Keith, you've got this, just don't drink, mate. You're going to be okay. Let me tell you that. But I've tried it. We've all tried it. Frothy emotional pills seldom suffices. The message that can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. Underlined it. It must have depth and weight. We have a program you can recover. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree. A message of depth and weight. You never need to drink again, right? In nearly all cases, and I underline this, their ideals must be grounded in the power of themselves if they are to recreate their lives. It's a big, big paragraph in a doctor's opinion. Big. It follows up. If any feel that psychiatrists directing a hospital for alcoholics, we appear somewhat sentimental. This is Silkworth's experience now. Let them stand with us in a while on a firing line. See the tragedies. Go and stand on the ward. He's asking us, let's go and stand on the ward and see the crying kids and the wives and the children. They want their dad to come home and pay the bills and go to work and buy some food. Put some electric and gas on. Come and see the tragedies, he says. The despairing wives, the little children, let the solving of these problems become part of their daily work. And even of their sleeping moments, even the most cynical will wonder why we have accepted and encouraged this movement. Because we have an answer. We have a solution. And Silkworth said, come and stand in a ward. Come and watch the chaos of the kids and the families and the wives begging. Please get my dad, get my husband well. Please let him come home. And the guy's dying of untreated alcoholism. Of course he's welcomed AA and welcomed Bill Wilson. And Bill Wilson would sit at the hospital bed and sober up Lou. And then Lou would come back with him and they would sponsor up Mia and then Linda and then Laura and then Mitesh. They'd all come back. And then before you know, you've got 10 or 20 people coming into the ward. We're sobering up more people day in and day out. Of course he's going to welcome it. because we carry a solution that he hasn't got the synthetic knowledge to sort out, to recover from. That we have found nothing which has contributed more to the rehabilitation of these men than the underline this, the altruistic movement, Alcoholics Anonymous, now grown up among them. And I highlighted now this next line for men and women, down to the following paragraph, next page to, of his recovery from 10 lines. And this is going to talk about the problem in step one. All right, men and women on page XXVIII, then XXIX down to the first paragraph of his recovery. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. We all like that effect. But we have a craving, an allergy. We don't just get the highs, we get the lows and the obsession, and then we get the carnage and the consequences and the problems brought on about our drinking. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the truth and the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, discontented, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes by taking a few drinks. And that's what we do. We get a sense of ease and comfort. But then the craving kicks in, and then the consequences come, then the problems come. He then says, drinks we see others taking with impunity. What does impunity mean? Without consequence. Without problems. With impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, when we're going to relapse, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops and they pass through the well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution, never going to do that again. I'm never going to drink like that again. I promise. I've done it right. It says here, this is important. It says, this is repeated over and over. Over and over and over. The experiment of that first drink. Am I really an alcoholic? I've been 2 or 3 days. I've been a week. I'm going to repeat that over and over. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, a personality change, to find the power we lack, there's very little hope of his recovery. And for us, next to that, I wrote insanity and allergy. And next to that paragraph. Because the insanity is I keep taking the drink. I keep blocking out the consequences. That allergic reaction is very little hope. Because for us, to drink is to die. And I smash that into every alcoholic. To drink is to die. This next little paragraph I've highlighted, because this is the solution. We've just read the problem. I'm just going to read the solution. It says, on the other hand, down to a few simple rules, the solution to alcoholism, right? It says, on the other hand, so we just spoke about the insanity and the allergy. To drink is to die. As strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, which means I'm going to die if I carry on drinking, who's had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly, underline that, suddenly, finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol because sanity has been returned. When sanity gets returned for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we see the truth of what how we drunk and the problems it's caused, and we have a solution, and we have the power of God in our lives, we never need to drink again, suddenly. Finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol. The only effort necessary, so all you have to do, being required to follow a few simple rules. We're going to lay down the conditions, as Frank did with me. We're going to go through the steps at a pace. When you understand what alcoholism is, we're going to take you for the solution, for all your resentments, get you to make your amends, and we're going to live life a day at a time, with a program that works. It really does, 100%. He says, men have cried out in sincere and despairing appeal. Doctor, I cannot go on like this. I have everything to live for. I must stop and underline this, but I cannot. You must help me. And a doctor said a page ago, with all our synthetic knowledge, with all the powers that I've got, I cannot help you. The only solution is Alcoholics Anonymous in the day of 1939 when this came out. Faced with this problem, if the doctor is honest with himself, he must sometimes feel his own inadequacy. Although he gives all of him, it's often not enough. One feels that something more than human power is needed to produce, underline this, the essential psychic change. Bill used strong words, essential. We must. Though the aggregate of recoveries resulting in from psychiatric effort is considerable, we physicians must admit we have made very little impression upon the problem as a whole, which is why they encourage AA in hospitals today, even more so. Many types do not respond to the ordinary psychological approach. I do not hold with those that believe that alcoholism is entirely a problem of mental control. I've had many men who have, for example, worked a period of months on the same problem or business deal, which to be settled on a certain date favorably for them, took a drink a day or so prior to the date, and underlined this, then the phenomenon of craving once became paramount. It took over. It was more important to drink than to stop because they had no solution to it. They had no answer to it. At once became paramount to all other interests. When I took a drink, I become thirstier. I don't give a shit about anybody or anything. The wife, the kids, the boss, the job, the finance. I don't care. I just want another drink, right? To all other interests is, so the important appointment was not met. How many appointments did I not make because drink became more paramount, more important, when I didn't turn up, when I was late, all the excuses, hundreds of alibis, because the drink was more important. And I highlighted these next five lines. These men were not drinking to escape. All the way down to continue to fight, this whole top paragraph. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome craving beyond their mental control. When they took one, the mind controls the body, because my mind's going to say, I'm just going to have two. I take a drink, then the body controls the mind. Because the body becomes thirstier. I'm just going to keep drinking, it says then. These men were not drinking to escape. They were drinking to overcome a craving beyond their mental control, which means you're powerless. There are many situations which arise out of the phenomenon of craving, which cause men to make the supreme sacrifice rather than continue to fight. The classifications of alcoholics seems most difficult and in much detail is the outside scope of this book. There are, of course, the psychopaths. This is type one. So next to this, you can write one if you like. There are, of course, the psychopaths who are emotionally unstable. I know a few of them in the group. I'm kidding. You look up, look. Yeah, you lot. We're all familiar with this type. They're always going on a wagon for keeps. We all do that. I'm never going to drink again. They are over-remorseful, make many resolutions, but never a decision. That's type one. This is now type two. There's the type of man who's unwilling to admit that he cannot take a drink. He plans various ways of drinking, different brands, different environment, on a full stomach, on a glass of milk. He changes his brand or environment. That's type two. Here's type three. This is the type who always believes that after being entirely free from alcohol for a period of time, he can take a drink without danger. I know a guy, I'll share many times about a guy who's 31 years sober, thought he was all right, took a drink, couldn't stop. 6 months is as bad as he was 31 years prior to that. The next type, the fourth type, here's the manic depressive type, who is a person at least understood by his friends and about whom a whole chapter could be written. And this is type five. This is me. There are types that are entirely normal in every respect. In every respect, except the effect that alcohol has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. All these and many others have one symptom in common. They cannot start drinking without developing the phenomenon craving. Gives you different types of personalities that we find in AA. You might not fit that because it says there's many others outside the scope of this book. If you've got the symptom, if you've got the allergy, welcome to AA. This phenomenal craving, as we suggested, is a manifestation of an allergy which differentiates these people and sets them apart as a distinct entity. This is the difference between the heavy or the real alcoholic to the hard drinker or the moderate drinker. All them fives are different types of people. They all have the same symptom. It has never been by any treatment which we are familiar with, permanently eradicated. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You always have that allergy. The only relief, and underline this sentence, the only relief we have to suggest is entire abstinence. Do not drink. Pick up the 12 steps. Find the pound. Solve the problem. This immediately participates into a seething cauldron of the debate. Much has been written pro and con, but among physicians and general opinion seems to be that most chronic alcoholics are doomed because the doctors back in the day didn't understand what alcoholism was. So if you was an alcoholic, you was going to die drunk. But then we found a solution in 1938 or 35. He says, what is the solution? Perhaps I can best answer this by relating to one of my experiences. This is about Hank Parkhurst. About 1 year prior to this experience, a man was brought in to be treated for a chronic alcoholism. He had but partially recovered from a gastric hemorrhage and it seemed to be a case of pathological mental deterioration. He had lost everything worthwhile in life and was only living, one might say, to drink. He frankly admitted and believed for him that there was no hope. Following the elimination of alcohol, there was no problem or no permanent brain injury. And I underlined this sentence. He said he accepted the plan outlined in this book. This was AA number 2 in New York, by the way. 1 year later, he called to see me, and I experienced a very strange sensation. This is what Silkworth recognized, right? I knew the man by name and partly recognized his features, but their all resemblance had ended because Silkworth brought him in as a chronic alcoholic. We all got him sober. When he came back a year later to see Dr. Silkworth, we didn't recognize him. We see people come to AA and they're 2 weeks later, they're looking different, their skin looks better. Linda, I've seen Linda in the group, I've seen the change in a matter of months in the meetings I've been going. They change and we see that in other people. And Silkworth saw it to a degree that he didn't recognize Hank Parkhurst, but he was totally different. I knew him by name, partly recognized his features, but there all resemblance ended. From a trembling, despairing, nervous wreck, I had emerged a man brimming over with self-reliance and confidence and contentment. I talked for him some time, but was not able to bring myself to feel that I'd known him before. To me, he was a stranger, and so he left me. A long time had passed with no return to alcohol. Hank Parkhurst did drink again, by the way. When I need another mental uplift, I think of another case brought in by a physician prominent in New York. This is Fitz Moyer. He was AA number 3. The patient had made his own diagnosis and decided his situation is hopeless. Remember what we said? Hopeless, godless, powerless. He had hidden in a deserted barn, determined to die. He was rescued by a searching party and in a desperate condition. Brought to me, following his physical rehabilitation, he had talked to me, which he had frankly stated he thought the treatment was a waste of effort. Unless I could assure him that, which no one ever had, that in his future, he would have the willpower to resist the impulse to drink. And we know that our own willpower doesn't work. His alcoholic problem was so complex, his depression was so great, that we felt his only hope, though, would be though what we've called moral psychology, underlined that in other steps in the program, right? And we doubt that would even have any effects. Fitzmoyer was real bad. However, he'd become sold on the ideas contained in his book. Fitz did recover, by the way. He has not had a drink for a great many years. I see him now and then. He's a fine specimen of manhood as one could ever wish to meet. I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through and through. Though he came to scoff or he came to push away, eventually, you remain to pray. All right, pause.